Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to a fresh new week with a fresh new perspective on media. I confess I was shocked, I tell you, that CNN just abruptly canned Chris Cuomo. Just as I was shocked he was even suspended. Well, look at that. Someone actually won a media ethics argument inside CNN. As in, let's have some media ethics. Let's have some concept of a conflict of interest being bad. Let's suggest in our external messaging that we don't tolerate our top primetime host daylighting and moonlighting as an attack dog for his brother, the governor of New York. Before sunrise on Sunday morning, sounds earlier than it was, it's December, I was rummaging through Brian Stelter's appearances on CNN in the hours after this stunning announcement. First, with Jim Acosta came this concept.
Yes, Chris Cuomo, one of the most popular anchors at CNN, one of the best-known names in television news, violated journalistic ethics and norms, not once or twice, but many times.
Oh, delightful. We're suddenly all caught up, Brian. It's like Stelter just arrived in a blazing DeLorean into the future and figured out, oh, Cuomo's a conflicted mess. In the 6 p.m. hour, Stelter added,
ultimately, there were so many headaches here, so many journalistic fouls, that management decided it was untenable for him to remain with the company. You know, television anchors do come and go, Phil, but Cuomo was a larger-than-life presence on this network.
Well, when you think somebody's larger than life, that's exactly what makes people think you're never going to let them go. I mean, what made Andrew Cuomo larger than life? His ego? Certainly wasn't his intellect, even though Chris Cuomo was always like, you know, I'm a lawyer. I went to law school. I like having my law professor, professor pundits on so I can show off that I went to law school. Okay, dummy. This is a guy, he's such a genius, he can't figure out. You shouldn't be advising your brother about how to trash his, the people he touched, the women he touched. Hey, let's go dig up some dirt. And he tried to claim he didn't do that. The texts say otherwise. In the 7 p.m. hour, Stelter announced,
ultimately, this is a matter of journalistic ethics and about journalistic standards, about what CNN could tolerate over time.
This was the most honest statement of the weekend from Brian Stelter. It really wasn't about CNN's ethics. It was about what it could tolerate over time. If it could parcel it out into fractions, which is what they've been trying to do for a bunch of this year, it's certainly the way that they managed this whole Smothers Brothers comedy routine that they were running in 2020. They thought, well, if the Democrats are all going to celebrate Andrew Cuomo like he's some sort of Winston Churchill of COVID, yes, we're looking at you, Lester Holt. Never apologized, did you, Lester Holt? You know, if he's going to be a celebrated man about town, why not put Chris Cuomo on with a very large Q-tip? It's just embarrassing. So it was what they could tolerate over time. Well, obviously, I think we can all look at this now, and you can see why Andrew Cuomo just hates Letitia James, the Attorney General of New York. Because she's a Democrat woman of color, and that's the sort of person that's going to be a little hard to smear. Especially with Democrat reporters. So you could argue Letitia James didn't only succeed in taking down Andrew, she succeeded in taking down Chris. Because this set of reports from the probe, she released these documents, that and the new accusation of sexual harassment, kind of did the guy in. You kind of get a kick out of them saying, well, this new accusation of sexual harassment might not be true. Yeah, tell it to Brett Kavanaugh. How was CNN on that one? But I don't think you should argue in any way that what happened here to Cuomo was unjust. You know, he obviously abused every privilege that CNN gave him and gave them several black eyes. I mean, they already had, at least with conservatives, a pretty bad reputation as a pile of partisan hacks. The idea that CNN runs around and somehow thinks, oh, Fox News is so partisan and we're not, is just ridiculous. It's like Brian Stelter claims he watches a lot of Fox. He's constantly documenting Fox. It's like he never watches CNN to see how CNN sounds. He certainly doesn't seem to have an idea of how CNN sounds to other people who don't agree with everything that Brian Stelter thinks. Get outside the hive mind of CNN and then see if you might find something. Then on Sunday, when the show started, the reliably liberal, reliable sources, the most ridiculous thing that Stelter said was...
I think this is a once-in-a-lifetime ethical dilemma that doesn't try to let off me off the hook, but there's never going to be another moment like this where there's a brother as an anchorman of a governor in the middle of COVID, and you know, one of them gets COVID. Like, this was a once-in-a-lifetime situation. That doesn't mean that everyone necessarily did the right things at the right time, but it was unique.
Wrong! This is not a once-in-a-lifetime ethical dilemma. This is a classic ethical dilemma that most establishment media outlets have embraced. Hire the famous relative. This isn't even new. Back when I started in 1989 at the Media Research Center, one of our big targets was Maria Shriver of the Kennedy clan. At that point, she was actually the anchor of the weekend evening news, Maria Shriver. And she did a lot of really embarrassing, like especially convention interviews. That's what I really remember about her. She did interviews with Hillary Clinton that were so sugary, you'd literally want to vomit. This is not new. Maybe Brian Stelter, being such a young guy, he doesn't seem to remember any of this. But you know he's got to remember NBC reporter Chelsea Clinton. What kind of a bad joke was that?
And as you may have heard by now, NBC News made an announcement this morning that we're awfully proud of. Chelsea Clinton is joining NBC News as a special correspondent, and she is asked to participate in our popular series, Making a Difference. She's anxious to report stories of volunteerism and highlight the great works of ordinary humanity that we encounter every day. So we'll be hearing from Chelsea Clinton very soon on upcoming broadcasts of NBC Nightly News.
She was making like 600 grand a year and doing about 10 stories a year, and they were usually about llamas and cotton balls or something. Or putting cotton balls on llamas. There was zero news value in most of what she was doing. And maybe you could say, well, it was feel-good segments for the Brian Williams primetime show. It just felt like, let's pay off Chelsea, and then we'll get better. We'll get more interviews with Bill and Hillary because we're paying off the daughter. I mean, NBC makes a whole habit of this. Shriver, Chelsea, Jenna Bush. Jenna Bush now is hosting the third hour or the fourth hour of Today. I mean, this is a softer thing. You wouldn't exactly call it a newscast. She's in the Kathy Lee Gifford slot. So you wouldn't exactly say this is comparable to a Maria Shriver or certainly a Chris Cuomo. But, you know, this is something that the principle remains. It's common. It's not unique. Then there's also the hire the publicist routine. This goes back to ABC hiring John F. Kennedy's press secretary, Pierre Salinger, as a reporter. I mean, he spent more time at ABC than he did working for JFK. You had Clinton press secretary George Stephanopoulos at ABC. He's been there many, many years. And now you have Dana Perina at Fox, as long as we're going to discuss this genre. It is not unique, these kind of conflicts. But obviously the networks doing them think that they get a benefit. Another category of it might be CBS hiring Gayle King. Why did CBS hire Gayle King? She gave relentlessly to the Democrats. By the way, Maria Shriver donated to her family Democrats while she was a reporter. But so there really was no standard when it came to the Kennedys. Surprise. But they hired Gayle King in part so they could get access to Oprah. It's like a sugar bean for Oprah. Oh, we want to get Oprah. We want Oprah to do ludicrous interviews with the royal family. We want Oprah Winfrey to do a ridiculous softball interview with Michelle Obama. As if Gayle King wasn't capable of doing that? But just the whole notion here that somehow Chris Cuomo is unique or this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing is just kind of absurd. Then on the Stelter show, he followed up by lamenting, oh, how the cable news landscape is going to change now. Cuomo's canned. Rachel Maddow's negotiated herself out of a nightly gig. Brian Williams doesn't want to do the 11 p.m. show anymore. And he has his Stelter has his toady David Zurawiec on, who just sounds like he says everything Stelter wants him to say. Sorry, David, but that's what you sound like.
It's a huge thing, and that's a big part of this story, Brian, I think, is that Chris Cuomo, as a performer, as talent in that 9 p.m. time slot, did a terrific job. I mean, he did a terrific job. He had almost a million viewers a night. He was competitive in the toughest primetime time slot there is.
Cue the laugh track. Who is David Zurawiec kidding about Chris Cuomo being competitive? Obviously, as a Packer fan, I'm going to say this is like saying the Detroit Lions this year at 1-10-1 have a shot at the playoffs.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
I mean, let's face it. Look at the numbers. Sean Hannity is averaging like 3 million viewers a night, and he's touting Chris Cuomo got almost a million. That's called being destroyed in the ratings. I don't know how you call that competitive.
In my opinion, that sucked.
He's also being destroyed by Maddow. So the idea that CNN really needed to hold on to Chris Cuomo because he was some sort of ratings leader, well, that's kind of funny. It just makes more sense that CNN didn't want to lose Chris Cuomo because he was a big name. Because his name had Democrat prestige. And the opposite on the Republican side of the agenda, but they don't really care. They don't care what Republicans think about CNN. But just this whole notion of, oh, we're losing big stars. Shouldn't this at some point be actually about the news, not about who reads it or who destroys it with a paste of smear or with a bucket of shoe shine? Can we really say we're that indebted to Rachel Maddow or Brian Williams? Like there's nobody else that could possibly do this. I mean, let's get over that. I mean, the idea that, you know, oh, big stars, big personalities, you make them up over the years. And I guess that's what they're saying. You've invested all of this time and fame into people because they've been on the air for 10 or 20 years. So you don't want to lose them. Okay, but you got to start over. I did like this take. You know, Zurawiec is currently a professor at Goucher College up north of Baltimore in Towson, Maryland. It's expensive to go to this college, but our pal Derek Hunter made a keen observation on Twitter. Weird that a professor of journalism would applaud someone who repeatedly violated what are supposed to be journalistic ethics. Yes, precisely. Don't suck up to Chris Cuomo after all this mess. Don't say that you're going to have separation anxiety from Brian Williams. You know, a few years back, Zurawiec on Brian Williams was saying a liar is a liar. Now he can't stand the idea of him not being on MSNBC. Later in the show, they tackled Fox's Lara Logan, comparing Dr. Anthony Fauci to Dr. Mengele. That's just wrong. But here we go again with CNN, who endlessly compared Trump to Hitler and everyone else evil, and probably everything evil, probably compared him to fatal diseases, certainly accused him of killing everyone who died of COVID. So, I mean, the idea that CNN would get up on a soapbox and lecture someone else about decency or smearing people, it's very rich. But Zurawiec said,
listen, I couldn't believe my ears when I first heard her comparing Anthony Fauci to Joseph Mengele. And my theory is this. This is someone who was a big, big star and an outstanding journalist on the greatest, most important TV journalism production in the history of the medium, 60 Minutes.
Oh, please. They never want people to forget that 60 Minutes is somehow God's gift to TV journalism. And they want everybody to forget this show was not only the home of Dan Rather's fake Bush news, but this was the home of sickening, syrupy interviews for Democratic politicians. The Clintons trying to get out of Jennifer Flowers, and Barack Obama's love-ins with Steve Croft. He didn't have to get around Reverend Wright because Steve Croft really wasn't interested in that anyway. Steve Croft, number one shoeshine boy. This is why we called the show in our own special report, Syrupy Minutes. And they didn't just suck up to Democratic politicians. They sucked up to left-wing celebrities. And of course, when they were sucking up to somebody like Jon Stewart or Stephen Colbert, at that particular time, Comedy Central was part of the CBS enterprise, so they were sucking up to liberals and doing synergy for the corporation. That's rather convenient. But just the idea, people get over the idea that 60 Minutes is somehow this tremendous thing. It's the same way these people tried to make a legend out of Edward R. Murrow. Edward R. Murrow was a hack. 60 Minutes is a kingdom of hacks. Then Zurawiec tried to claim Lara Logan is now no longer relevant.
She's no longer relevant. She's moved to the margins, and she's adopted this playbook that Donald Trump used and now Lauren Boebert and people on the far right use of being super transgressive to get attention to themselves. It's kind of like a drug addiction because you have to get worse and worse and uglier and nastier, and they keep doing that.
Look, it's absolutely true that writing nasty statements about Fauci to Trump's fan base is catnip or clickbait, etc. That can be a temptation you should probably resist unless, you know, your goal is to just be the hottest thing on Twitter until you get canceled by Twitter. But again, who is CNN and their associated pundits to lecture about being super transgressive on the far right? If being super transgressive makes you far something, then CNN is far left. Let us never forget, Brian Stelter put some cuckoo on his show to say Trump would kill more people than Hitler, Stalin, and Mao combined. I guess with the global warming, if not the COVID. That was super transgressive. But being super transgressive against Trump is exactly what Brian Stelter has ever wanted. He's always wanted. It's absolutely what left-wing Twitter wanted, what the Occupy Democrats wanted, what the Midas Touch goofballs wanted. And then there's Zurawiec. For his part, he went on Stelter's show and called Trump an adolescent psychopath in his relations with the press. Oh, okay. So now, like, Trump's like a school shooter. Who's being super transgressive and getting uglier and uglier and nastier and nastier? Zurawiec also said on that show, Rupert Murdoch and Fox News are now a danger to democracy. It's just fascinating the way these people are always like, Fox is a danger to democracy. Why? Because they offer an opposing point of view. Isn't democracy about opposing points of view? The reality in America is that we have a vibrant democracy going on. Now, you have to kind of flip between channels to see it. You're going to get more debate on Fox than you're going to get on CNN or MSNBC. You're more likely to get some form of a Democrat or a liberal Republican on Fox than you're ever going to get a conservative on CNN. I mean, their audiences cannot stand an opposing point of view. But we have a vibrant democracy right now. And these people want to, basically what the liberals want to say now is, the proof of having a vibrant democracy is by banning Fox, shut down Newsmax, get rid of OAN. And by the way, we're the forces of democracy and free speech. Speaking of screeching about democracy, Dana Milbank wrote an absolutely ridiculous column for the Washington Post on Sunday, and the headline was, get this, the media treats Biden as badly as, or worse than, Trump. Here's proof. Yeah, this is just as promising a headline as, hey gang, plywood is food. Hey, sea monkeys are real. That's about as much respect as this deserves. The idea that anyone with ears or eyes is going to see Biden's been treated worse by the press than Trump. I mean, you would have to get an idiot, and that means artificial intelligence, to try to make this argument. This was what Dana Milbank actually said. Artificial intelligence can now measure the negativity with precision. Yeah, no, it can't, but let's continue. Milbank says, at my request, a data analytics unit of the information company Fiscal Note combed through more than 200,000 articles, tens of millions of words from 65 news websites to do a sentiment analysis of coverage using algorithms that give weight to certain adjectives based on their placement in the story. Please stop and laugh at the idea that a machine can do a quote-unquote sentiment analysis.
I'm a cybernetic organism, living tissue over a metal endoskeleton.
Dana Milbank is not exactly transparent in describing this research. I mean, first of all, the whole idea of, you want a human to read these articles. This is not, I wouldn't call this news reading. When you can say, oh, we looked at tens of millions of words and no human actually looked at it. Dana Milbank offers no actual example. You know, when the media research does a study and you could try to say, oh, you're a bunch of right-wingers, I don't trust your analysis. Okay, but you can duplicate it because we tell you how to do it. This is how we did it. This is the date range. This is what we were looking for. You can go try to duplicate it or prove that we were wrong. We're going to provide you with quotes and videos and analysis to give you an example of this. Dana Milbank doesn't do any of that. This article is just a bad joke. Milbank continued, the findings, painstakingly assembled by Fiscal Note Vice President Bill Frischling, confirm my fear. My colleagues in the media are serving as accessories to the murder of democracy. Come on, dummy. Stop. Just put your orange hunter clothes back on and try to go on an Olbermann show, because that looked ridiculous. This looks more ridiculous. I'm so tired of this murder of democracy bilge. Grow up! After a honeymoon of slightly positive coverage in the first 3 months of the year, Biden's press for the past 4 months has been as bad as, and for a time worse than, the coverage Trump received for the same 4 months of 2020. Well, look, I just don't believe that. I don't believe that for 1 minute. Yes, was Biden's coverage recently, is it negative? Yeah, I guess it's negative. It can't be as negative as Trump's. And you can sit there and try to use a computer with whatever adjectives you chose. You're not going to convince the average person, because there's a difference in the tone of negativity between Biden and Trump. There's a difference between, well, Biden's moves in the economy so far haven't helped him that much in the polls, and Trump is murdering democracy. Dana Milbank just proved to you, with the kind of language that he used, that their idea of negativity against Trump is so hyper-aggressive. It just does not compare. People covering Biden, when they say something negative about him, it's all couched in, gee gosh, we sure hope this turns around, but right now it doesn't look great. That's just different. The tone of it is different, and you're not going to get the difference in the tone when you hire a machine. Now, naturally, Milbank is using all of this gunk to argue that the so-called mainstream media should have a dramatic bias in Biden's favor because Biden is democracy and Trump is authoritarianism. Just the arrogance in these people dismissing the entire Republican half of America is perennially breathtaking. Anybody who voted for Trump in 2016 or 2020 is an accessory to the murder of democracy. I mean, if you're going to call the news media an accessory to the murder of democracy when you know 99% of those people voted for Biden or Hillary, what are you calling Trump voters? Voting for Trump was a move against democracy. Now, you don't have to be wild about how this guy refuses to concede, how petulant and dumb that looks. But you don't get to say that 74 million, whatever, 70 million plus people are all for the murder of democracy. Except guess what? The so-called independent fact checkers will let you say that because there is no weight for liberal excess. These fact checkers, you call John Ossoff a socialist and they all lose their poo. But you can say somebody is an accessory to the murder of democracy and they go, fair. Then Milbank says, we need a skeptical independent press. Yeah, no, he doesn't really mean that, but that's just to clear your throat. But how about being partisans for democracy? The country's in an existential struggle between self-governance and an authoritarian alternative. And we in the news media collectively have given equal, if not slightly more favorable treatment to the authoritarians. I mean, it reads like he needs a hanky. We're not, first of all, the conservatives aren't the authoritarians. But second of all, the idea that Trump and the Republicans are getting more favorable coverage, I don't think even Dana Milbank believes that. People don't believe that. Real Democrats in the media don't believe that. They wouldn't do that. They would rather quit than do that. This is called working the refs. This is people just trying to say, well, Biden's doing badly, so we need to shame people. Yeah, Milbank says, too many journalists are caught in a mindless neutrality between democracy and its saboteurs, between fact and fiction. It's time to take a stand. Now, you know the obvious answer to that is, you don't think anybody in the media has taken a stand against Trump until now? Were you literally born yesterday? I mean, what an insult to Brian Stelter and all of his friends saying that Trump is Hitler. You're not a very nice person to your liberal friends. Now, of course, you do an article this stupid, this pro-Biden, guess what happens? Biden chief of staff, Ron Klain, retweeted it. Of course he did. But their analysis is just this crude. When Biden is down in the polls, it must be the fault of the press. If Trump is down in the polls, that means the media is doing their job correctly. I mean, that is no way to measure press coverage, just like you don't use a computer to do it. I mean, the media, the idea that the media is being tough on Biden, they don't even get credit for ignoring damaging stories like the border. You think they're all doing tough border stories right now? No. What border? You think they're all doing stories now on the television about Kamala Harris being a horrible boss who's losing staff left and right? No. Bill D'Agostino at Newsbusters took this up. I took this up. He also took this up. He took this up because Brian Stelter publicized this stupid Milbank article. He noted back in April, MRC analysts took an exhaustive look at all the evening news coverage from ABC, CBS, and NBC and found that during the first 3 months of each president's term, the coverage of Trump was 89% negative. Coverage of Biden was 59% positive. That is not even close. Different time measurement than Milbank's. But between 2017 and 2021, the coverage of Trump averaged between 90% negative and 92% negative. In just 3 days of June of 2018, we found 22 instances in which cable news commentators compared the separation of parents and children illegally entering the country to slavery and the Holocaust. Where was the Anti-Defamation League then? This included CNN political commentator and Democrat strategist Dave Jacobson, who did it more than once. Stelter and David Zurowick didn't screech about Dave being a drug addict, being super transgressive back in 2018. Because back then it was okay to compare Trump to slavery, to compare Trump to the Nazis, to compare Trump to Stalin. That was all fair commentary. Couple notes just to wrap here that, you know, this stupid study that Milbank is touting, its sample of so-called news article content included opinion sites on both sides. He wrote, predictably, Breitbart and the New York Post are among the most negative outlets, but even liberal ones such as HuffPost and Salon have been negative. So now he's trying to shame HuffPost and Salon because obviously if you're on the left, you're supposed to love everything that Biden does. This is, you know, to me, I would never try to include opinion sites. You know, when we say we're the Media Research Center, we're basically trying to measure and study, for the most part, media outlets that offer themselves as objective or fair and balanced or have that legacy of that's what they were founded to do. Maybe not so much now when you have a motto like democracy dies in darkness and then you don't allow your articles to be put on Nexus so people can investigate the patterns. And the Post people are like, oh, come on, if you pay $200 a month or something, you can still look at the Washington Post. No, the average person doesn't want to do that. I don't even want to do that. You should be able to be in Nexus with everyone else, you cowards. You know, people like Milbank, this is what gets me. Some people in the media act like Newsbusters doesn't have the qualifications or job experience to credibly critique the media. You know, back years ago, Brent Baker made this point, and I think it just is always an excellent point here, and that is that journalists aren't epidemiologists, but they report on COVID. Journalists have no wartime experience, but they report on the military. You know, journalists have all kind of fields that they're kind of parachuting into in which they have no expertise. They really have no right to turn around and say, well, you media critics can't credibly critique us. I can say that a column like Milbank's makes me think journalists are the worst media critics. I mean, they're so elitist, they basically think no one else should criticize them because they are the partisans for democracy. But anybody with an eighth grade reading level can determine that the Washington Post, and especially the editorial pages of the Washington Post, is one long scroll of democratic groupthink. You don't get to say you're a partisan for democracy when you're basically just a partisan for the Democratic Party. And anyone who thinks those things mean exactly the same thing is the kind of hack that you shouldn't trust to give you the news straight. So if you want a vibrant picture of democracy, watch some Fox, flip over to CNN, flip over to some C-SPAN. What you're going to see if you look at all of those is that America's democracy continues, and we are here to be part of that democracy. So come read up once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.